We're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Our pollinators are struggling. A new federal survey found beekeepers in the United States lost more than 40% of their colonies last year. In reaction, the White House has announced a new strategy to protect pollinators and grow bee populations. The plan calls for making more federal land bee-friendly, spending more money on research, and considering the use of fewer pesticides. Joining me to talk about what's wrong with our bees' health and what can be done about it, Andrew Joseph, Iowa State apiarist. That's a fancy word for a beekeeper, if you don't mind me saying so. Andrew Joseph, welcome to our program.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate it.
Jerry Hayes, also with us by phone, honeybee health lead at Monsanto and commercial director of BeeLogix for Monsanto. BeeLogix is part of Monsanto that researches colony collapse disorder and bee health. Jerry Hayes, welcome to you as well.
Good afternoon, and good afternoon, Andrew. We haven't talked in quite a while.
No, it's been a while. Yeah, it's good to hear your voice.
Yeah.
Let's reach out to our listeners this half hour as well. Beekeepers in the Midwest, in Iowa, join our conversation with your concerns, your questions for these two bee experts about the health of our bees and perhaps your reaction to the EPA plan that we're about to outline or to the views of either Andrew or Jerry. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send us a post, put a post up on our Facebook page if you'd like to do that. Andrew, let's start with the basics. Catch us up on the basics. What do we know about what is causing the death of these colonies?
Well, sure. What we know is that it's definitely not one particular causal factor. It's not just one thing. It's a mix of different stressors, hardships, and contaminations in beehives that are doing it. The greatest of these issues for bees, I think, something that I think we're beyond debating is the varroa mite. This is a parasitic mite that gets into our hives. If you keep bees, you've got varroa mites as well. And it's a management issue. Beekeepers need to manage these mites because the bees just simply are not capable to handle it on their own. If we let, as beekeepers, the varroa mite overrun our colonies, it's just a fact that the colonies will crash, and that'll be the end of that, and we'll be starting over, hopefully with a little knowledge behind us, and we won't make the mistake again. But unfortunately, the majority of beekeepers are not managing varroa mites. And these parasitic mites are building into damaging numbers in our colonies, doing physical damage and also spreading viruses and a range of other maladies through our hives.
Where do these varroa mites come from?
Well, it's been a host shift is what's happened. The way that everything kind of tends to move around the globe these days, it's shifted from one species of honeybee onto our good, gentle European honeybees that we've got and like to keep here in the U.S. And with that, what we have is this immature relationship between our honeybees and this parasitic mite. Normally, a parasite isn't going to kill its host. That's kind of bad for the parasite if it, you know, wins the battle or and then loses in the end. And that's what we're seeing here. We've had the mite in the U.S. since the late 80s, and it's been in Iowa since, I believe, the early 90s.
How does it physically kill a bee?
Well, the mite biology is that it reproduces down in the bee brood. So about the time that the honeybee goes into the pupation stage, this is kind of the honeybee equivalent of, say, a caterpillar, you know, spinning a cocoon, you know, hanging from a leaf. This all happens inside the hive in the honeybee world. The mite jumps on down into that cell about the time that it's capped over for pupation and breeds. And in that process, it feeds off of the bee by piercing through the bee's pupae's exoskeleton and feeding off of that. And that's how a lot of the viruses get transmitted by the mite and on from there. So it's a combination of physical damage and then also spreading viruses and things like that through. Mm-hmm.
You said the varroa mites is one thing, but there are also other stressors.
Sure.
What are the other things that we definitely know are contributing to colony collapse disorder?
Sure. It absolutely, there's a whole spectrum of things. It's not just the varroa mite. It's also nutrition, which, you know, it can also somewhat be managed by a beekeeper, but it's a landscape issue. We need more diversity in the environment. We need safe zones for bees to forage from lesser contaminated areas so that they're not bringing in pollutants back into the hives. We need a variety of different plants in bloom throughout the year to provide a diversity of protein so that they get their complete amino acids and other forms of nutrition that they need to be, you know, sort of fully completely healthy. We need nectar sources. That's their carbohydrate source for the bees. Nectar from flowers. We need plants in bloom from spring through fall consistently so that they always have food at every available opportunity. We also need freedom from pesticide drift and exposure. We've already had documented case this year in Iowa. Hundreds of hives have been damaged by corn seed dust. This is something that's been controversial over the last several years, but, you know, as we, you know, do analysis of samples that are collected of dead bees and also drift, you know, swab samples from surfaces around bee yards, we're starting to find these seed treatment insecticides, you know, in the samples. So it does seem like kind of a smoking gun that, you know, we've got some adverse effects going on out there when bees are located relatively in close proximity to agricultural fields.
Mm-hmm. Jerry Hayes, let's hear your take. Honeybee Health Lead at Monsanto, Commercial Director of Bee Logics for Monsanto, the part of Monsanto that researches bee health. How long have you at Monsanto been working on this disorder?
Yes, I've only been here about 3 years. I was the chief of the apiary section for the Florida Department of Agriculture before I came here, and what we call colony collapse disorder was actually found on my watch in 2006, and so I've been involved in this issue of honeybee health since then. Here at Monsanto, we're working on a different technology, hopefully to control varroa mites. As Andrew said, that's our number one target. You have this huge, huge parasite of honeybees, and if you and your audience would make a fist and put their fist someplace on their body, proportionally, this is how large a varroa mite is to a honeybee's body. Huge parasite, you know, feeding on the bee, their hemolymph, their blood, vectoring viruses, pathogens, causing immunosuppression, some nutrition issues. And the crazy thing, and the reason I'm at Monsanto, is the only thing that beekeepers were given were pesticides to put in a beehive to kill a little bug, the varroa, on a big bug, a honeybee. And we just have to do better than that. Putting pesticides in an insect's nest is just crazy. So here at Monsanto, we're looking at a new technology that hopefully would remove those chemical pesticides from honeybee colonies and maybe do this a little bit differently so that we can have something a little bit more sustainable.
Mm-hmm. What do you have on the market right now? Is it those pesticides that you're saying aren't the best way to tackle this on the market right now that are put into hives?
Yeah, those are available. Monsanto doesn't have any products on the market right now, but there's other companies that do that provide these pesticides. And, you know, to Andrew's point, they actually saved the industry 30 years ago by having these. It was kind of a quick fix, we've never been able to get past that, and so we want to do something different.
Mm-hmm. So what are the thoughts on how you kill a mite that is traveling on, feeding off of a larger insect without killing that larger insect, in this case the bee?
Yeah, and so the chemical pesticides that beekeepers have to apply is all about dosage and exposure, and so they introduce these pesticides into a beehive in a dosage that is low enough to kill the varroa mite, but not high enough to kill the honeybee. But there are, you know, there's chronic implications. There's collateral damage. If you can visualize inside of a beehive, or maybe you've seen honeybee wax comb, that beeswax is a fatty acid. It's a chemical sponge. And so everything that the beekeeper applies to a beehive is sequestered in that beeswax. And then honeybees are environmental samplers, if you will. They can forage efficiently in about a 2-2.5 mile radius of their colonies and be exposed to all sorts of environmental toxins, bring it back. And then those, of course, are stored in that beeswax. And so the bees are exposed 24/7, 365 to toxins. And so we really need to get those toxins out. APHIS, a unit of the federal government, did a residue survey a few years ago and looked at all the chemical residues in the colony, and 42% of those residues were actually the miticides that beekeepers put in a colony. So if we could remove 42% of toxins from a beehive, I think we would be in a lot better shape.
We're talking about bee health this half hour with Jerry Hayes of Monsanto and Andrew Joseph, Iowa's state apiarist.
Bee guy.
I love that. Bee guy. Andrew Joseph of Iowa. You keep over 100 colonies of bees yourself, I understand, Andrew.
I do.
Mm-hmm. Let's get your reaction to the White House plan. The federal government hopes to reverse our country's declining bee, honeybee, and also monarch butterfly populations by making more federal land bee-friendly. I guess this goes to that diversity you were talking about and the nutrition, spending more money on research and considering the use of fewer pesticides on that pesticides issue. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has proposed limiting the application of what it calls acutely toxic pesticides during times when flowers are in bloom and in areas where farmers have paid for bees to help pollinate their crops. The restrictions would apply to 76 chemical compounds, which account for many hundreds of products. Andrew Joseph, what do you think about the White House plan, the EPA's suggestion here about limiting pesticides specifically?
Sure. Well, I think I can speak for just about all beekeepers and say that we definitely appreciate the attention. If I can summarize a 60 or so page document by just saying it's nice, that's kind of where I'm at on it. It addresses a lot of issues. Like you said, it's not just honeybees. Of course, that's kind of where my brain focuses in. But, you know, we're looking at honeybees, some native pollinators, monarch butterflies, the list goes on. And they're providing metrics for improvement, you know, measurable sort of parameters that we over the next several years can pay attention to and record and see if the changes that are proposed are actually making any difference. And I think a lot of this is in line with what a group called Bee Informed Partnership has been trying to do for a number of years now. And Jerry's been involved in that along with another man, Dennis Van Engelsdorp, and several others. And the goal is simply reducing colony losses. Let's have a little bit better success in our industry. And I think that's spot on. So one metric this document provides is, you know, let's give ourselves a few years and try to get these losses, honeybee losses, reduced down to about a 15% level. That would be sustainable. Our industry certainly could.
Is that realistic?
I hope so. I don't know. I hope so. I think it is. I'll tell you that I have never, at least years and years, I have not had a 15% loss. I can speak for a lot of other beekeepers that they're reporting losses well under 15%, even right now. And, you know, it comes down to similar, you know, there's a lot of parallels with their management and what this White House document is trying to encourage. Good forage and habitat, proper management, some safety, you know, from contamination, at least the best that you can aim for in our environment, and then managing that mite. You know, I put 80 colonies personally into last winter and lost 4. So that's about five point something percent loss. And that's here in Iowa where we're deemed to have somewhere around a 60% loss across the entirety of last
year. You're doing much better than most other Iowa beekeepers.
That's right. And it's not just me. You know, this isn't meant to be like some kind of humble brag or something like that. But I'm saying I'm paying attention like a hawk to varroa mite numbers. I'm making sure that my bees never even think that they may get hungry, you know, or that nutrition can go down to a low nadir. I'm only wintering strong colonies. I'm not dealing with anything that's not, you know, they'll get combined or just shaken out. There's a lot of management that comes into it.
We have undoubtedly the ears of Iowa beekeepers out there listening. What messages do you want to get to them first and foremost? If you could pick a couple of messages that you think will most improve or most limit the losses we have in our hives.
Sure. Well, in a nutshell, you know, I keep coming back to varroa, so I could harp on that again. I don't know how interesting it is to the general public, but, you know, I see it as almost a moral issue with beekeepers. If you're going to keep a hive of bees, you need to manage varroa mites.
Manage how?
Well, right now, with the options that we have available,
the pesticides
that are these pesticides largely. But, you know, there's also a genetic component to this. And there are some non-chemical management techniques, too. You know, we can approach it with an integrated management. We can only treat when necessary, you know, looking directly at varroa mites instead of, you know, pests in general. We can monitor our varroa mite populations in our hives with pretty decent accuracy. We can treat when it's deemed necessary, you know, in other words, when a certain varroa number threshold is crossed and we feel that, you know, an injury is going to occur if we let the number rise further, we can monitor following up those treatments that we do when necessary to make sure that they're actually effective. The timing of them is critical as well. You know, it's not as simple as what it once was. These varroa mites really have kind of turned beekeeping on its head. There's enough years that's gone by, though. I really do wish we were doing a better job at managing them away.
Jerry Hayes, we have 5 or so minutes left of this conversation. Give me your reaction to the White House plan and Monsanto's reaction, I guess.
Sure. No, first I wanted to, pat Andrew on the back because he is spot on. You know, Iowa's got a lot of commercial beekeepers. We have tremendous amount of commercial beekeepers in the United States, and it's all about management. It's many of the hobby beekeepers that really need the skill and expertise and training that Andrew can provide in Iowa to learn how to manage their colonies better. Andrew's a super resource. President's Task Force have been involved with discussions on that for months. I think it's a tremendous start. I think it brings together those entities that can bring some synergism to solving a lot of our problems. And also, you know, when we talk about forage and nutrition, for honeybees, basically we're talking about, golly, hundreds and hundreds of species that can benefit from these plantings, not only honeybees, but solitary bees and butterflies and birds and everything else. It's one of these things, you know, build it and they will come. So that whole component of it is good. And then if we can, you know, look at, some ways to get some of those toxins out and away from honeybee colonies, I think that's tremendous.
Some have criticized Monsanto's participation in these efforts to help pollinators by saying that, well, not selling the implicated products would be an obvious solution. How do you respond to that criticism?
Well, you know, first, Monsanto doesn't make those chemicals. And then number two is that Monsanto's customers, those very, very successful farmers in Iowa, have asked for those products to keep bad bugs from eating their crops. That will, of course, impact our availability of food and everything else. So this is a continuum. And if you look at some of those, chemicals that have been implicated in field-relevant dosages, the data shows that they don't do a whole lot. If they're misused, as Andrew indicated, if they somehow, you know, get off the plant or the farmer isn't respectful of the beekeeper, then, of course, yeah, they will impact that.
So you're saying what Andrew described as this pesticide drift is a result of misuse or misapplication of perhaps a Monsanto product?
Well, you know, and there's a whole bunch of different levels of this. Did the products, stay on the seed? Was the equipment calibrated properly? What was the weather like? What was the soil conditions? All these kind of things. And I think that we have to take all these into consideration as we look at this whole continuum.
Okay. Let's go to Kay in Ames. Kay, we don't have much time, but what is your input? What are your interests?
We were a hobby beekeeper and brought 2 hives to Ames when we came from northwest Iowa. We came in August on the 25th, and before fall really set in, there were just 8 live bees left. And we have lawn sprays for weeds on both sides of us, and I think that's what did them in. So I'd just like to hear your comments.
Did you survey for varroa, and what was your varroa counts at that time?
No, we'd had really healthy hives.
But you didn't have any idea of varroa? And what was the last time you treated for varroa?
We didn't.
Okay, there you go.
But we had hives that swarmed, and so I just think that, you know, why would they disappear in a month?
Yeah, well, you know, honeybees are altruistic, if you wish. They're all sisters in the colony, and when they are sick, when they have parasites or what have you, sometimes those bees will leave the colony and just leave the colony and not come back because they don't want to reinfect their sisters. And so you can have colony population drop over time because of that. But I'm going to have to, you know, go back to what Andrew said. It's varroa, 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 nutrition, nutrition, nutrition. And if you don't control varroa, you're not going to be a bee.
You said varroa hadn't reached the state, though, until 1990s.
It came in the late 80s and in Iowa in early 1990s.
Yeah, and this was 1985.
Oh, okay. Well, then.
Oh, I thought you were
okay.
talking last
time. We're running out of time to diagnose that,
yeah.
Kay.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, sure thing. Kay in Ames, a quick word before we have to go about what a lot of us are concerned about. This is something like a $15 billion value to the U.S. economy. Honey supply. Which of you can say how this is affecting our honey supply and the honey cost?
I'll let Andrew take that.
Andrew.
Oh, gosh. Well, we need to get bees through the winter. You know, and what this, a lot of the stuff from Bee Informed has shown is that losses are not only occurring in the winter, it's a year-round sort of phenomenon. I was actually personally surprised at the rate of loss that we experienced throughout the season. It's kind of hidden. We have to get colonies, you know, up and running with strength, get through the winter. That's how honey is made. You need that strong colony in the spring to be split off, divided, make up, recoup losses, and then make a crop for you. And again, you know, what this paper aims to do is, you know, hopefully increase that success in the industry so that we have strong, productive colonies to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supply and demand from there. You know, fortunately, you know, simultaneous to the bee problems, you know, these kind of maladies that we're experiencing, consumer interest on local honey and a relationship with your local beekeeper is way up. And I think we're just now starting to see that reflected in honey sales. And that's great, too. So if I can promote one thing, it's not my own honey. It's just local honey, no matter
where
you are.
I've heard local honey is more valuable nutritionally for us humans to eat than, I don't know, honey imported from South America. Is that true, Andrew?
It sure is a special product, yeah. And I think if it hasn't been, you know, overheated and it's been delicately handled, you're really purchasing something with a better flavor. You're purchasing something, you know, with potentially more enzymatic activity in there, maybe a higher level of nutrition. You know, you're getting the straight dope, you know, the real deal. It's not contaminated with, you know, corn syrup or some other ingredient. It's the real thing that you're after, and that's important.
Andrew Joseph, we have to buzz off. Sorry.
Thank you very much.
Our bee guy, Iowa State's bee guy, apiarist, Andrew Joseph, Jerry Hayes of Monsanto with us as well, commercial director of Bee Logics for Monsanto. Jerry, Andrew, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so
Appreciate
much.
Appreciate it. Yeah, thanks.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Claire Roth, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. It's a News Buzz edition tomorrow on the program to finish off the week. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.